Hello, hello, hello. It's Ari Rosenbaum, soon to be joined by Dane Venturi for another fun-filled episode of That 401k Podcast. This week's topic, we are going to talk about really some of the problems that plan providers can't afford not to fix. They have to fix it because no matter what kind of job they do, if they don't fix these problems, it really doesn't matter on the professionalism or really how they stand out in the industry. So we're going to join Dane Venturi in a sec and talk about what I think is a great topic. And we're back. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ari. How are you?
I can't complain. I mean, I could, but, you know, nobody really would listen.
No one would listen.
So how was your week?
Eventful. A lot of good stuff going on. Good stuff, man. You know? How about yours?
Last weekend, big baseball card show that I had to go to with my son. You know, I met so many people, I like forget already, but, we met Steve Garvey, which was great. So I talked to Steve about our event, in LA, that 401k conference at Dodger Stadium. He's the guest and he's excited that, he's very excited about it. My friend Warren Green, who was, kind enough to escort Andre Dawson to our Wrigley Field event. He was there because he helped me book Steve, and he was sitting next to Steve at the autograph show. And, you know, it was just very funny. Warren talking about how great the event is and you know, such fun. And Steve was very excited about it. And I think I already committed myself to San Diego that if we do San Diego, we'll bring in Steve Garvey. So,
all right.
And who else? My son, you know, was dreaming about this convention for months, and we met George Foreman, which I really wanted to meet. I had him, we took a picture with George, which was very funny because George, you know, they sell autographs, you know, items that you can get George autograph, and this is the only time I've ever seen it happen, but they were selling a George Foreman grill for $40 for George to sign. I didn't have him sign a grill. I had him sign a boxing glove, which, you know, I've had Mike Tyson. I met Mike Tyson. I've had met Tommy Hearns. And so I have a boxer, you know, sign a glove. So now it's sitting in my office right behind me as we speak, right above my 2015 Mets signed helmet by a bunch of guys from the 2015 Mets. We met Chipper Jones, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Burt Blylevin, Trevor Hoffman. I met Randy Jones, who played for the Padres and the Mets. We met the Hanson brothers from the Slapshot movie. Met Julio Franco and Tommy Herr. I mean, it was just crazy. Bob Lilly, the funniest thing is, Doug Drabeck, Andrew Jones. Anyway, my son's very lucky in life in the sense that he wins things. So as part of the show, they give you a bunch of baseball cards, and inside, like, one out of every five packets is a free autograph ticket. So we go Saturday. We come home. Saturday, he wins a free autograph ticket to see Andrew Jones. We come back again on Sunday. He gets another package, and then he gets a free autograph ticket to meet Bob Lilly from the Dallas Cowboys.
Good for Jason. Good job.
Yeah, so we had that. And so, yeah, that was the week. We're, of course, still plotting our conferences. That 401k conference, again, in Los Angeles, Dodger Stadium. This week, a whole bunch of providers. Just even today, we had John Hancock sign up. They're going to be a sponsor for the event. Ascensus signed up. Of course, you'll be there with Brightworks. Of course, Kravitz is always there. We have a whole bunch of providers still trying to sign up a few more. So if anybody out there wants to be part of the sponsoring the event, a couple slots still available, even speaking roles. I've been booking a lot of people, plan sponsors for that 401k conference and that 401k plan sponsor forum in St. Pete on March 7th for the conference for the advisors, March 8th for the plan sponsors. Looks like our guests for those days for the March 7th conference, former Yankee great, which I think he's going to be a future Hall of Famer, Lou Piniella. And then on March the 8th, he is a Hall of Famer, Wade Boggs. They both have connections to the Tampa Bay Rays and to the Yankees. So we're looking forward to that. Iron Financial is going to be a sponsor for both events. I think we're going to hear from Empower soon about sponsoring it. Lampco, and some other providers as well. We're just, everything's in flux. Still talking, still looking at April 12th. We booked it in Atlanta, May 3rd, Kansas City. June, we haven't booked yet, but we're looking at cities. And September looks like Cleveland, but we haven't fully booked that yet. But we're looking at that. So again, go to that 401k site for more information. You could sign up for the LA events, the St. Pete events. We've already had a couple of planned sponsors sign up for those events, which is going to be fun. So that's enough spiel and shilling for the conferences. Let's get to the show. Really, the topic today is really, no matter how good you are as a plan provider, there's certain things that you don't take care of your business. It really doesn't matter how great you are. I've had the unfortunate experience. I never met an employer. I never worked for an employer that I was totally satisfied and happy with. I think they did a lot of things that were wrong. And it didn't matter if they didn't fix certain things. Didn't matter how professional they were. There's certain things in life, if you don't take care of in business, it doesn't matter what kind of product or what kind of service you sell, because people are just going to really look into it, really delve into the situation, and you really can't recover about it. I think the biggest thing to me, whether it was working for these TPAs or working for some of these law firms, or even as the former vice president of a struggling and dying conservative synagogue in Rockville Center, I think the biggest problem that many plan providers have is really a lack of vision. Not really saying that, no matter how good and how professional you are, if you really don't see how the business is turning out or how the business is, it really doesn't matter how great of a service you have, because you're very, very short-sighted and it's going to negatively impact your business. I mean, we could use an example. Let's look at right now Sears. Sears at death's door. Looks like Eddie Lampert is going to win an auction to take Sears private, bail him out of bankruptcy, which he pretty much brought them into. And, in my opinion, he's bringing Sears out of bankruptcy and buying it on an auction for Sears to die another day. And, Eddie Lampert's, in my opinion, is responsible for the death of Sears, because Eddie Lampert never put a nickel into the stores. You know, every department store puts in a couple bucks to upkeep the stores. Any type of business puts in a couple of dollars here and there. You know, you have an amusement park, you gotta replace some items, replace the carpeting, whatever it is. Any type of business, you always have upkeep, and Eddie Lampert didn't put a nickel to the stores, and it suffered, and sales suffered. And then he started selling off and spinning off assets that made it difficult for Sears to continue and to continue to contract its business by losing more and more sales. So what do you think about the lack of vision?
I think our industry is notorious for that. I think the industry is slow to change, slow to adapt to new trends. I think advisors, TPAs, I mean, every part of every spoke of the industry, I think, can learn from that, right? Look ahead. Look to see what's coming. Look to see the trends. Look to see, once the boomers are gone and retired, what's next?
Exactly.
How do you engage the younger generation? How do you incorporate technology into your business? How do you manage your time, right? I mean, there are innumerable ways to leverage technology in what we do to make it better. And I think the faster all stakeholders do that, the better of a product that can be delivered.
Yeah, I mean, to quote the wrestling great Paul Heyman, experience is the greatest inhibitor of creativity and change. And I really believe that, having, been involved in organizations or working for employers, Experience is the greatest inhibitor of change. And years ago, when I first started in the business, I worked at a TPA, and I worked with a paralegal who pretty much taught me everything I needed to know about ERISA and how it really was, as opposed to what the book said it was. And she was a paralegal from the times pre-ERISA. And she said to me one time, she says, you know, I was here during the Tax Reform Act of 86, and, you know, there was a lot of changes dealing with retirement plans, especially defined benefit plans. They pretty much were frozen for about 2-3 years. And she said, you know what, when the Tax Reform Act of 86 came out, there were a lot of plan providers, especially TPAs, ERISA attorneys, whatever, just went out of business, couldn't adapt to the changing environment, and just went out of business. And we've seen a lot of providers out there, especially on the TPA scale, you know, cashed out after the fee disclosure regulations went into place. Same thing with advisors. If you weren't ahead of the game when it came to fee disclosure, you were going to suffer. I worked for a TPA that was a producing TPA. It was going back 11 years ago, 12 years ago now. It's going to be in March when I left. And I said, you know, the way we handle revenue sharing, you know, revenue sharing is going to die. Revenue sharing is going to be phased out. And we're not going to we're not going to do well with that. And I had an administrator, oh, you know, what are you talking about? Revenue sharing's here. You know, what are you saying? And, you know, fee disclosure regulations did come out 5 years later. And look, fee disclosure is as popular as, you know, bell bottoms and ruffled shirts. It's really something that, you know, I saw a mile ahead. Now, I wish I could have seen the winning, you know, Powerball numbers, but I was able to predict that because that's the way the business was heading. And, you know, reality, you have to come to grasp with reality and that the way the business is moving. And you really have to keep your ear to the floor. You know, I belong to too many synagogues in the last few years. I've been to, I think this is the third synagogue we're a member of, and they all suffer from the same problem, where they're suffering problems in membership because members don't see the value in paying $3,000 or $2,000 to belong to a synagogue. There are opportunities where they could go to another synagogue run by what they call the Chabad thing in Lubavitch and not pay that much money or not pay anything at all. And, you know, they're suffering and they continue to suffer because they don't understand that they are part of the problem. And again, when I was a vice president of synagogue, it was very, very hard for me to work with other people there who were the same people who drove down membership from 750 members down to 300. And they lacked vision. They thought the same thing that they did 40 years ago is still important today, and they still should do the same things. And, you know, I would do out-of-the-box stuff, like bringing Sal the stockbroker into a synagogue and having him do a comedy routine. And that's really the same thing for any type of business. It's the greatest inhibitor of all. That's experience. You can't let experience get in the way of creativity, get in the way of changing with the times, because like I always say, if you don't change with the times is going to change you. And of course, talking about problems that, you know, it won't really matter if you don't fix it, not communicating with your client. I think that that's a big thing. The idea that whether your advisor, your TPA, your ERISA attorney, if you're not communicating with your client on a regular basis, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you start to become, as you know, one of my favorite musicals, Chicago, like the song, you become Mr. Cellophane. Everybody sees around you; they see right through you. If you're not there, and you really, as a plan provider, you really can't afford to be invisible to your client, because your client will assume that they don't really need you, that you're really not there for them, and they could communicate with somebody who's going to be there more frequent.
Sure. I mean, we touch a client, you know, at least 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, that's a function of you know, some of the things that are germane to our, you know, spoke in the industry, so to speak. But you know, if you're an advisor, I mean, you know, reach out to your client more than once a quarter. Your DPA reach out more than, you know, twice a year for testing and 5,500 prep. I mean, it to your point, Ari, if you're not, you know, reaching out to your client, you can damn well be certain someone else is. And if that client is reaching out to your client more than you are, they're not going to be your client that much longer, right? I mean, that should be pretty self-evident. You know, we all need to hunt, right, to get new business. But it's a heck of a lot easier keeping the business you have than having to replace it for something as simple as just, you know, keeping in touch.
Right, right. Well, absolutely. You got to make yourself available and around. You can't just say, oh, call me anytime you need me. You actually have to show up or communicate with your client on a regular basis, because otherwise, out of sight, out of mind. And especially if you're a financial advisor, you can't really be like a TPA who has that routine where they could communicate, you know, through email, dealing with deferrals and, you know, end of year census information, 5,500 time. You know, as an advisor, you have to show up to your client every few months, every 6 months or a quarter, depending on the size of the plan. And you have to be there to review the fiduciary process of the plan. So, you know, whether you're a advisor or a TPA or a risk attorney, you have to show what I call proof of life, which, you know, you have to show for kidnapping victims. But you have to show proof of life that you're doing a good job and you're not taking the relationship with the client for granted. We've talked about it. I think we talked about it in the podcast, but when we were in Philadelphia for the conference at Citizens Bank Park, we had Brinker Capital did a presentation, a really good one on their 338 services. And Brinker Capital brought up something that I was involved with. They said, you know, I remember that I forget, was it Paul Day? I forgot the guy's name already because I'm terrible with names. Anyway, he says, you know, Ari, you remember that plan you worked on? I said, yeah, I remember that plan. So I was working on a medical practice plan out in Pennsylvania. Advisor, it was a broker who I think was related to one. I forgot they were related to one of the parties. They were related to somebody working there. He was a broker on the plan, getting 60 basis points on a $14 million plan, and he never saw the client. Never reviewed the funds, never saw the client, out of sight, out of mind. Never gave him education materials, never had investment policy statement. Needless to say, Brinker Capital came in with another advisor, with a RIA. They were now being a 338 in that situation, and I think it probably cost the plan sponsor 25 basis points to 60. So again, that broker was falling asleep at the wheel. He was taking the plan sponsor for granted and really banging him for a really large fee, and boom, somebody was there very quick, very nifty and cost effective, and was able to communicate with the client and got a new client as a result. So, you know, you need to be communicating with the client. When you're a TPA you're, you know, not communicating about plan failures, I mean, that's a problem as well. You need to be in constant communication with the plan sponsor. So if a plan is failing safe harbor, it's failing testing, and you need to implement a safe harbor plan design, you really have to communicate with them and just can't trust them that, you know, what's going to happen. So, you know, that is a problem that needs to be taken care of. So a TPA, you know, really needs to, sit back, not sit back. Actually, I have to communicate to the client. You know, I was dealing one time with a plan sponsor with a consistently failing discrimination testing, and the payroll provider TPA never bothered to communicate and say, you know, to the client, you know what, this has been this new thing since 1999 called the Safe Harbor Plan Design, and maybe if you offer it, you the owner of the company doesn't have to return $10,500 in deferrals. You know, it's something that, you know, you have to communicate with the client. If there are issues, you need to be, you know, too many times, plan providers are not proactive, they're reactive. And in this day and age, when you have so much competition, you got to be proactive. And if there's a glaring, consistent compliance problem, then you have solutions to it, well, that's something that you need to discuss with the plan sponsor. You can't just sit back and, you know, just collect that fee and just do the work. You actually have to be in communication. Communication, you know, it really obviously is key.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if there was a way to sit back and collect money for doing nothing, right? I mean, unfortunately, that's not how things work.
Right.
You know, you have to deliver a service to sort of justify the compensation that's paid to you. You know, whether it's what we do on the 316 side or what Ari does on the legal side. I mean, something is being done, right? There's nothing for nothing. And again, there's nothing simpler than making a phone call and picking up the phone and then having a conversation with your client. That goes a long way in today's world. And I don't see this most, you know, I'm sure. Listen to this podcast, but they'll be calling. Started adopting that pretty quickly,
right? But you know, it's really you can't you just can't sit around and just wait, you know, and just do nothing. You actually have to be very, very proactive. There's just so much competition in this business that you can't just sit around and just do nothing. You know, early bird catches a worm, as I say. Next topic, in terms of things that are very big problems, obviously, for plan providers not paying attention to details. For a TPA, that's very costly. You make a mistake in administering a client's plan or helping them administer a client's plan, it's going to come back to bite you. Whether you know they fire you because you caused them a lot of problems, or because you actually have to make up for the errors that you made. I've seen that happen. Working for two TPAs, there'd be processing errors. There'd be administrative errors, and, you know, you actually, there's a reason why you have an E&O policy, you know, that sort of thing. So, I mean, it happens, but, you know, if you're a TPA, you're a advisor, you're an ERISA attorney, you're an auditor, you can't afford not to pay attention to details. You got to make sure that you know, all the T's are crossed, got to make sure that everything's done correctly, especially on the TPA side with the compliance testing. ERISA attorney, you know, drafting plan documents, submitting plans for termination and that sort of thing. You know, obviously you have a strong attention to detail. That means you're going to make fewer errors. You don't want to put plan sponsors harm's way because your job is not to do that. So, you know, no marketing skills can really help you if you don't do a competent job in your day-to-day service as a plan provider. You know, you're a TPA, you're not doing a good job, you're making errors left and right for the plan sponsor client. I don't care what kind of marketing you're doing. Nothing is going to fix that. I don't care how great your website is or how great your podcast is or your video cast. If you do a crappy job, who cares? And that's why you need to have a strong attention to detail. And listen, as somebody who edits his own writing sometimes when I write articles, it's a pet peeve of mine to see, you know, grammatical errors. You know, I go through it. I have software that goes through it, and it's something, you know, you try to avoid. So make sure you have attention to detail. Next, not properly training employees. I don't know about you, Dan, but I work for a couple TPAs, and we didn't do a very good job in training the employees. The first TPA I worked at, They didn't get people right off the boat, as they say. They got people right out of college. My alma mater, Stony Brook. They would recruit, hire these kids right out of college, and give them absolutely no training to begin with. And, you know, when you're in college at Stony Brook, you don't major in 401k administration. There is no course. There is no major in 401k compliance. So, you know, you got to make sure that the employees that you work with, work for you, get the proper training that they need. If you're a TPA, make sure they get through some qualifications through, you know, let's say ASPA. If you're a RIA, you know, make sure they get accreditation from FI360. There's DALBAR offers accreditation. Just make sure that, you know, the employees that you have are properly trained so they can actually do their job in a competent manner.
Oh, yeah. No, we talk about it all the time. And, I mean, I think everyone shares the same story. I think, you know, we all got to Oz by tornado, right? I mean, you fall into this industry. There's nothing – I don't think there's anyone that sets out, you know, unless you're – it's like a generational thing and you're taking over for, you know, your father or, you know, some sort of familial thing. No one sets out to get into this business. You land here from, you know, somewhere else. You know, so I think that's part of what feeds that lack of training, right? There's no formal pipeline. You know, once you're here, I mean, I know when I started consulting, I mean, my background was in selling 401k plans, right? So I kind of had to, there was no training there either. You just sort of pick it up, you know, real fast as you go, or, you know, you don't, and you end up in another career.
No, yeah, so exactly. People ask me all the time, well, why'd you become a nurse attorney? Well, what's my stock answer? It's the first job I got. You know, I had an LLM degree that summer in 98. I still couldn't find work. I took the California bar exam during that summer, and there was like a website. I don't know if it exists anymore. It was kind of like a monster.com for attorneys called like lawyernet.com. I think that was Employernet maybe. And there was a TPA moving to Syosset that needed a risk attorney. So, you know, I went down to, they were a TPA still in Irving Place in the city, right by Irving Plaza. And they needed a risk attorney because, you know, Marge, the paralegal was phasing out, going to retirement in a year or two. And, you know, Harvey Berman says, oh, can you do the job? Well, you know, I took ERISA classes at the BU Law for tax alum. Of course I could do this job. And voila, you know, starting out at $35,000 a year.
And big money.
Big, big money. Even in 1998, that was crap. Listen, you got to start somewhere, as they always say.
Yeah.
By December, I started September. By December, I was now making 40 grand.
Wow.
I thought I was like, you know, I was raking in the dough. But hey, you know, the stock market was really going up at the time. So everybody was wealthy. Seligman Communication Fund, Janus 20, you know the rest.
There you go.
Boom, boom, late 90s. So yeah, you got to really make sure that you actually train your employees. You hire them out of college. Make sure that they got the training that they know, because they're the core curriculum. Classwork doesn't really deal with 401k plans at all. Next problem that you need to fix, and if you don't, it's going to be a problem, is when you have too much employee turnover. You know, I worked for a TPA in the city, really nice offices. They really had a really nice fancy office, a lot of nice wood furniture. I like wood. It's like I feel like Larry David. I respect the wood. And we had a very fancy office, but I jokingly said that we needed to put in a door, you know, a turn door, you know, because there was constantly turnover, I think that any company, any plan provider out there that doesn't control turnover and has too much of it is at a disadvantage. I'll tell you from the TPA side, if you have every 4 to 6 months or every 6 months to a year and you got to tell your client, by the way, your new day-to-day contact is so-and-so because so-and-so left or so-and-so got fired. That's a problem. People don't like revolving doors. People don't like too much turnover. If your plan sponsor clients see too much turnover in your business, they start to think that something's not right. But looking at your side of things, if you're a plan provider and you have too much turnover and you have a revolving door, it negatively impacts your business because, you know, you lose time out of the day training new employees or going through the process of pushing out employees that are leaving or you're firing and bringing in new ones and training them. So turnovers are really a bad thing. And the way to avoid turnovers is turnover is obviously hire good employees, treat them well, pay them well. I always say that, the reason I don't have employees is because I was an employee once too. It's hard to satisfy employees. And I've also worked at union side, law firms, and they have a negative view about employers. Of course, they're the perfect employer. They're actually the worst employers I've ever had. But, the employer-employee relationship really is this. This is what I always say. No employer thinks they pay their employees too little, and no employee thinks that get paid too much. So there's a meeting in the middle of what a good pay is, what kind of good benefits there are, and if you pay your employees well and you treat them well and with respect and you don't bust your chops every 3 seconds, you're gonna have less turnover. And, it's very, very hard to find good help, especially on the TPA side. A lot of bad people out there, a lot of bad employees out there, not a lot of great ones. And if you have a great employee, great administrator, you know, make sure they stay with you. It's really hard to find good help.
It's hard and expensive, right? I mean, I saw something that turnover costs something to the tune of between $3,000 and $5,000. Per employee, so in addition to everything that you said, there is a tangible, painful cost to turnover. Exactly what you said. All right, find good people, find smart people, train them well, maybe give them a little equity, right? Give them a reason to stick around.
I thought you were going to go into a Whitney Houston song and let them lead the way.
Well, they announced yesterday Gladys Knight is doing the national anthem at the Super Bowl.
So. Oh, good for her.
So there you go. No, but what I'm saying is consider it, right? Give them something to keep them there, to tether them to what you do, right? You can't. Employees, I could not run my business without good employees. You can't be everywhere, right? And there's a lot of little stuff, and it's not little, it's that little stuff that adds up, right? That decides whether or not the business works. But that's the stuff that you need your good employees on, right? You guys, advisors, I mean, you know, you're going to be up there high level kind of stuff. I know in what we do, right? I have my signature goes out on probably a couple, 100 things a week, right? All the different distributions, all the different approvals we have. I'm not signing all of those, right? I don't have the time for it. I have staff that does it. And if I didn't trust them implicitly, that those things can go haywire. So for all those reasons and all the reasons that you mentioned, Ari, turnover sucks. Great employees are invaluable. If you find them, hold on to them like gold. Don't let them go.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You really got to treasure them, value them, and keep them. It's like, collecting baseball cards. Finding good employees is very, very hard. And so once you have it, you have to hold on to it. Last but not least, I think the one biggest mistake, if you can't fix it, if you can't take care of it, it really doesn't matter what kind of service you're providing, not being able to accept fault and saying that you're sorry. I think that saying you're sorry is one of the most important things out there. And there's nothing wrong to admitting when you're wrong and apologizing than making cockamamie excuses. Because I think a lot of times playing sponsors, when you make a mistake, if you say you're sorry, it really goes, you know, better. If you don't, they're just going to harp on the fact that you won't apologize. I think a perfect example of that is years ago, I still to this day have a client who is a law firm group out in Long Island. They handle workers' comp cases. Anyway, he had a named partner. I think I talked about it on the podcast. He had a named partner who's both his wife and daughter worked for the law firm, and the TPA didn't include them as key employees. And, you know, the clue was they had the same last name as one of the law firm partners whose last name was in the firm's name. You know, where I come from, we call that a clue. So anyway, they go to another TPA. They go to, I think it was Newport Group. Newport Group reviews the plan and says, oh, by the way, you know, that top-heavy test you thought you satisfied a few years back, well, you failed it, and now you got to make up, you know, 12 grand in top-heavy contributions from, you know, 2 or 3 years before. And I took it to the TPA, and the TPA had 50 million excuses as to why it was the plan sponsor's fault. And, you know, the plan sponsor doesn't know what a key employee is. If they fill out the census information incorrectly, I don't care what kind of TPA you are. You should always look over what the plan sponsor does because, you know, like Rodney Dangerfield says in Back to School, the reason he didn't buy highlighted books is maybe the guy who highlighted was a maniac. So maybe the plan sponsor is a maniac. And it's happened before where not a maniac, but I had a payroll provider TPA send out a census report to a plan sponsor. I heard this from a TPA. Sends it out to a plan sponsor. Identify who all your key employees are. So a plan sponsor has no idea what a key employee is. They think it's somebody who's integral to the operation of the company. And so they identify all the employees as a key employee, including the cleaning woman who was making 30 grand a year. So lo and behold, TPA comes back and says, oh, by the way, you're top heavy. So, you know, you can't make mistakes and not apologize for it. I think that when you go a long way and you try to make 50 million excuses as to why something's not your fault, you run the problem. When you're an advisor and you bring the plan sponsor to an investment and, you know, as it turns out, when there's a termination of service with one of the providers and there's a surrender charge or a you know, other some kind of fee, like, you know, with a stable value fund, like a market value adjustment. If you didn't let your clients know ahead of time and you know, they suffer and go through with it, you got to apologize and identify that, you know, you didn't tell them. You know, people care too much about liability and not care about doing the right thing. When you make a mistake, you made a mistake. That's why you carry insurance. That's why you have E&O. That's why you have, you know, as a plan fiduciary liability insurance, because, you know, we all make mistakes. It's how we handle them. It's how many we make. But, you know, obviously, do we learn from them? How do we handle them? Do we apologize for them? And you just can't go around being indignant and feeling that apologizing, you know, is some kind of defeat or some kind of failure. We all make mistakes. Some more than others, but, you know, as long as we make amends for it and as long as we learn from them.
Mistakes are human, right? It makes you more relatable if you acknowledge it. We all do them. We all make mistakes. We all screw things up. Now, I do think it's important to quantify big mistakes from little mistakes. I mean, you have to own both of them. But it's a lot more preferable to make little mistakes, and obviously it is those big ones. You know, we're still in a business where there's a ton of accountability, so I don't think there are a whole lot of sponsors unless, you know, you're blessed to have a very strong relationship with that client that, you know, some of those big mistakes might not be survivable, right?
Right.
So that honestly, that feeds right back to your earlier point about attention to detail. Right? If the folks are you know, related to the one of the partners in the firm, that might not be survivable, right? That's something you got to pay attention to. You know, so I think those two points are pretty much in lockstep, right? Pay attention to detail. If something does slip through the cracks, be sure to own it and apologize.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's really it. I mean, again, these are all, you know, kind of mistakes that we make. And if you don't learn from them, if you don't fix these, it doesn't really matter if you are, you know, the second coming of Peter Lynch. If you don't fix these type of deficiencies in your business is going to suffer. And it really doesn't matter how great you are, because people will see the wrinkles. Well, they will see the defects in your service, whether it's, you know, not paying attention to detail, poor communication skills, or problems with employees, either through turnover or, you know, lack of training. You know, if you don't really handle it, if you don't see what's going on, these are glaring problems that are just going to negatively impact your business. So I think we hit that one over the head. We knocked that one down. I think that's going to be it for this week.
Sounds good.
Okay, until next week, we'll have probably more information on the conferences and, you know, things that we're doing. And, you know, we'll have another topic next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Take care.
Absolutely. Have a good day. Have a good weekend, guys. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
About all the dead people.